All right, let's bring in someone I've enjoyed talking with prior to getting him on the air. He's another author from McFarland Publishing, and McFarland does a terrific job with putting out baseball books, and check him out on the web, McFarlandPub.com, and that is David Flights. He's the author of The Irish in Baseball, an Early History. David, welcome to the show today.
Thank you for having me. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, I always look at the, you know, sort of the picture of the roots of baseball, and major leagues have always looked for cheap labor. They did it through Cuba. They did it in Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic. They still do it there. And I look back to the history of baseball, the beginning of baseball, and you did a great analogy to baseball and America, and also the roots of the Irish coming to America after the famines in Ireland and how they got into baseball and, in my opinion, formed a little bit of the bedrock of baseball in the 1800s. Now, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Irish really were the bedrock of baseball then, and all through the 1800s, the Irish had been coming here even before the potato famine. The canals in New York State and the canals in Chicago and all were largely dug by Irishmen, Irish laborers looking for work, coming here to look for work. Well, when the famine hit in the 1840s, millions upon millions of Irishmen came here. So then by the 1870s, when Major League Baseball was just getting started, the first generation of Irish that were born here were becoming young men. And the Irish have always loved sports, and baseball and the Irish grew up together.
You know, and it looked like the shillelagh, and you bring that up in the book, that, you know, similar to the baseball bat is something they sort of like to swing.
Yes, the shillelagh and the baseball bat have a lot of similarities. You know, in the eastern, especially in the eastern states, the upper class were in the late 1860s, 1870s, they were playing cricket. But Americans, and especially Irishmen, were not wanted to find a game that wasn't so British. So many of the very early baseball teams played both baseball and cricket, but baseball wound up winning out because it was a truly American game.
Yeah, you know, I've read that before, that, you know, we had rounders here, and of course cricket as well. Rounders, of course, came from England, and America wanted its own game. And I think you just nailed it there, and the Irish were part of it. But again, I go to the idea of major. This is Labor Day, and we talked about the Players League of 1890, having disputes with labor and management and all that, and they formed their own league. Management has always been looking for cheap labor, and the Irish trying to get jobs because they did not have the skills to get in different jobs in the country in those days. Baseball became a very easy avenue for them to get into it, and baseball liked it because they didn't have to pay a lot to get these people to play.
That's right. When there were so many industries that said Irish need not apply, they didn't want the Irish, but baseball being a total meritocracy, we just want to win. So the Irish flocked to baseball, and of course, being a source of cheap labor. All through the history of baseball, you find if you interview an old-time ball player, they'd say, hey, I'd have played for free, I just want to win. Of course, that's what management loves to hear. But the Irish were a great source not only of talent, but of cheap labor, too.
All right, David Flights is with us, and the book is wonderful. It really is. I've enjoyed learning a lot of this history. It's called The Irish in Baseball, and I hadn't really thought of it in this context until I read the book and to see this, as I say, the bedrock of baseball through the Irish people. An Early History, David L. Flights, F-L-E-I-T-Z, McFarland Publishing is the way to take a look at it. Also at the Book Tree up in Montclair, David always has a good way to come up with these books. David is a member of Sabre, and you're a computer systems analyst, and you live in Royal Oak, Michigan. How did you get involved with this book?
Well, I started out as a teacher and then went into the computer biz, but I've just always loved writing and I've always loved baseball. In 2001, I wrote a bio of Shoeless Joe Jackson, which was my first book for McFarland. I believe the Irish book was my sixth. You know, it's something I love, it's something I like, and it's, you know, writing is something I really enjoy doing. And I thought the Irish, I have a little bit of Irish background, not too much, but I have a little bit of Irish background. But it amazed me, too, to see just how not only did the Irish form the bedrock of baseball, but it remained because the next generation, all the way into the 1900s of managers, in 1920s, 1930s, most of the managers were Irish. They were John McGraw, Connie Mack, and people like that. Casey Stengel, for example, was half Irish. You know, the Irish influence extended for generations after that, with managers and umpires, too.
David, did they play the game a certain way? And, of course, when we look when Jackie Robinson came into the National League, he brought the Negro League type of baseball, the wide-open kind of baseball that we hadn't seen in the National League before. When the Irish played baseball, did they have a way of doing it? And maybe it reflected the times, the way the game was played then. But did they have a sort of a way they played the game?
Well, in the 1880s, 1890s especially, the Irish were an incredibly aggressive, hyper-aggressive, win-at-all-cost type of ball player. The 1890s are just full of incidents of players and umpires having fist fights on the field and off the field, and play that we would regard quite as dirty and spiking people and everything. It was win at all costs, and of course, because they were cheap labor, you know, their jobs were always in jeopardy. There was always somebody who might want to play, who might want to take their job for a smaller salary. So they fought. It was an incredibly tough way to play. It was eat or be eaten, I guess.
Yeah, very good. David Fleitz is with us because it sort of goes with my theory that everything that happens in America shows up on a baseball field one way or another. And I think you just proved it, that the Irish struggling to make their mark, even the next generation, to fight their way through it and get their jobs and things like that. And it showed up on the baseball field the same way.
Yes, baseball reflects society, and baseball is simply is just one of many mirrors to hold up to society at large.
All right, the Irish in Boston, though, and of course we still think of the Royal Rooters back in the turn of the century, and and the Irish influence in Boston. What about that?
Well, Boston being a very Irish. Being one of the main ports of entry for the Irish, had a huge Irish presence there, and it was no surprise that the Boston team, which won the pennants in the early 1890s, were very, very Irish, and players like Hugh Duffy, who hit 440 one season, and Tommy McCarthy, who invented plays. They used to say that half of the rules in the National League were put in to avoid one of his him finding one of the loopholes. Like the trap play. He was a genius at the trap play, and catching the ball in the outfield on the bounce and then doubling up a base runner who had to be stuck between bases. So they played what they called scientific baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Very intelligent, very aggressive.
Yeah, very good. It really is. It really shows the nature of the game, and that nature of the game went to Stengel, to Billy Martin, to Leo Durocher, and goes all the way up to today. You can find the roots, the tree of baseball, and it really comes back to what you're talking about. Tell everyone about the Royal Rooters, and of course this goes back to the Kennedy clan and the mayor of Boston at the turn of the century. Who were the Royal Rooters?
The Royal Rooters were this large bunch of fans. Today they would probably be football fans, but they didn't have football back then. So they would follow the Royal Rooters would follow the Red Sox around the league, especially on the Eastern Seaboard, and they'd march on the field before the game, and they'd play their horns and cheer and everything. And their leader was a man named John Fitzgerald, who became mayor of Boston and who happened to be President Kennedy's grandfather. So Rose Kennedy was his daughter. So John Fitzgerald really identified himself with the Royal Rooters and with baseball, especially the Red Sox.
Well, they would travel, and it was a big deal. I mean, the Royal Rooters were huge. It was the most colorful part of the Boston Red Sox.
They did. They They'd crowd aboard the trains and go to New York or Washington or wherever, and you know, root for their Red Sox.
Very good. All right.
Especially,
Go ahead.
Yeah, especially the Red Sox won 5 World Series in the first 2 decades of the 20th century. They were one of the top teams. And you know, it seems strange to when they finally won it in 2004. It had been what, 86 or 87 years.
It took them a while.
It took them a while, but they were on top in the first 2 decades with a very Irish team.
All right. Well, this is great. It's a wonderful book, and it's easy to read. And there's a lot of good history in it, and it really taught me a lot about the beginning of baseball and how the game was played and why it was played that way. And the struggle of the Irish people that really reflected on the baseball field. Anything special that you learned in doing this book and about Charlie Comiskey or anything you learned that you say, wow, I didn't know that?
Well, one thing that really struck me, being I grew up in Ohio, I was a Detroit Tiger fan, but I was not too far away from Cleveland, that Cleveland's team in the 1890s, which was an almost all Irish team, they called them the Hibernian Indians then. they were the rowdiest team of all. In fact, we know about the Baltimore Orioles because they won pennants and how, you know, nasty to the umpires they were, the brawling Orioles. Well, the Cleveland team was even worse. In fact, the book I just finished for McFarland is about the 1890 Cleveland Spiders. They were called the Spiders then. And about their rowdiness and their wildness and the on-the-field fights and the off-the-field brawling and the and the forfeits and the and the battles and the so that really led into my the book I just turned in, which should be out early next year, about the Cleveland Spiders of the 1890s.
Very good, very good. Well, I enjoyed it. And David, you've got some other books out, and I know I've seen the list of them, and I'm looking forward to getting a couple of those and getting you back on. Tell the fans, because it is a part of McFarland Publishing, McFarlandPub.com. What else did you have out?
Well, my first book was a bio of Shoeless Joe Jackson. One book was about the baseball's very first superstar, Cap Anson. I like to write bios of people who hadn't had bios before.
Mm-hmm.
And my second book was about Louis Sakalexis, who is the first Native American major league ball player. He played for Cleveland in the 1890s.
He did. He was a terrific player until he jumped out the window and drank too much and got hurt. But supposedly the logo and Cleveland Indians named after him.
Well, when he joined the team, well, the team was called the Spiders in the 1890s, but he was such an incredible athlete. He was a Jim Thorpe a decade before Jim Thorpe came along.
That's how great
an athlete he was. They called him the Cleveland Indian.
Yeah, I look forward to that one.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, this is good. David Fleitz, Fleitz. David, we'll have you on again, and I learned a lot from the Irish in baseball. This is a good one. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad you do. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. That is David Fleitz. More coming up, KNBR 680, the sports leader.